Up next, J. Robert Oppenheimer. After viewing the first atomic test in 1945, Robert Oppenheimer was an American theoretical physicist and professor of physics at the University of California, Berkeley.
We knew the world would not be the same. Few people laughed. Few people cried. Most people were silent. I remembered the line from the Hindu scripture, the Bhagavad Gita, Vishnu is trying to persuade the prince that he should do his duty, and to impress him, takes on his multi-armed form and says, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." I suppose we all thought that one way or another.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Playing with Stereotypes. Where do stereotypes come from? Why do some stereotypes persist? In this program, TED speakers examine the consequences of stereotypes. You can hear this program at 96.5 FM if you're in the Sacramento area, or you can listen to it from accesssacramento.org, or you can download it from greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
What is the worst role that you've ever been asked to do?
Well, you know, starting out, I would just go on any audition that came my way. So I actually got a Chuck Norris movie of the week once called The President's Man, A Line in the Sand. I played this guy who was like a physicist who was in Chicago to blow up a building.
I've lived here in Chicago for 10 years now. Your father, Rashid, he paid for my education. A PhD in applied physics from Northwestern.
And he worked for like a Osama bin Laden type guy.
I knew one day I'd be called upon to serve a greater good, to serve Allah.
And I went for the fitting, and they go, "Okay, you know, here's your shirt, here's your pants, here's your turban." I swear, and I was like, whoa. I go, "This guy wouldn't wear a turban." They go, "No, well, you know, he's this Afghan guy. We want him to wear a turban." I go, "First of all, Afghans in America don't wear turbans. And secondly, if he's trying to blow up a building, he definitely is not going to wear a turban." I was like, "That's just stupid." I said, "Please let them know." So she's like, "Okay, I'll talk to them, see what happens." So then the next day I show up at the trailer, and there's my shirt, there's my pants, and there's a scarf. And I was like, "Oh, great. You guys gave me a scarf." She's like, "No, that's the turban. You just got to wrap it around your..."
"You know, Abir."
So I wore the stupid turban.
"The closer I get to Allah."
And I swear, I tried watching it, and it was so bad.
"The more peaceful I become."
And then I said, "No more." I said, "No more terrorist parts."
It might be funny now, but for Maz, for a lot of actors who get typecast because of their ethnicity, it can get depressing. So comedy, it helps.
Stand-up comedy is really like therapy. So whether you're dealing with ethnic issues, or you're dealing with just issues at the house, you're having an issue with your wife or your kids or whatever it is, you go on stage and you can actually just riff about it and find the funny in it. And really, by finding the funny in it, it helps you cope.
Does it feel like some of those tropes about Muslims or Arabs, you know, that came after September 11th, like, have they kind of dropped off a little in the past few years, or is it worse?
No, listen, man, it's like, it's always like one step forward, two steps back, because, you know, anytime you think like, "Oh, great, we get a break. Al-Qaeda's slowing down. Oh, here comes ISIS." You know, it's always, you know, even this is just going to exist no matter what happens. I mean, you could have 1,000 Iranian or Arab doctors saving lives every day in the United States, and the lack of exposure that would get compared to one Muslim trying to blow up a car bomb in Times Square, like the Pakistani guy had tried to do it years ago, and now the Muslims are coming to get us again.
Now, I happened to be in Times Square that night doing a comedy show, and a few months before that, there was a white American guy in Austin, Texas, who flew his airplane into the IRS building. And I happened to be in Austin that day doing a stand-up comedy show. Now, I'll tell you, as a Middle Eastern male, when you show up around a lot of these activities, you start feeling guilty at one point. I was watching the news. I'm like, "Am I involved in this crap?" I didn't get the memo. What's going on? But what was interesting was when the white guy flew his plane into the building, I know all my Middle Eastern and Muslim friends in the States were watching TV going, "Please don't be Middle Eastern, don't be Hassan, don't be Hossein." And the name came out, Jack. I'm like, woo! That's not one of us. But I kept watching the news in case they came back. They were like, before he did it, he converted to Islam. Damn it! Why, Jack? Why?
Do you ever come across people who are, you know, who are Middle Eastern or Iranian or Arab American who are just like, screw this, you know, I just want to completely hide from my identity because I'm just tired of like being tagged for something that I'm not.
Absolutely. I mean, I used to do a joke about how a lot of Iranians just became Tony. Yeah, they became Italian. I mean, that was the way they dealt with it. Because I tell you, if you look at it in recent history and in the U.S., so you got 1979, 1980, you got the revolution, then you got the hostage situation, then you got the movie Not Without My Daughter.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, yeah. Which is about an American woman married to an Iranian man, and in America, he's great. But as soon as they go to Iran, he turns into an animal. I remember, like, when Not Without My Daughter came out, I'm serious, I think that dating from Iranian men became a lot harder. Dude's named Shahrukh became Tony. Masood became Mike. I mean, these guys were like, screw it. I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
When we were all together, we'd be speaking Farsi. Yeah, what's up? Da, 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 da. As soon as like some blonde girls would go by, hey, girls, how are you? This is Mike. This is Tony. This is Vinny. You know, it's like, what? We're the Sopranos.
I mean, what's like the balance between finding the funny side of a stereotype and then actually trying to break it?
Look, stereotypes exist because there's always some truth to stereotypes. Not always, but often. And I personally feel like if there's a balance out there, I think the good thing about America is that it is a melting pot. There's so many different people here. And I myself, sometimes I see something and it breaks a stereotype. When I see Asian Americans, I expect them to speak either like this or with an Asian, you know, like a Chinese accent or Korean accent or Japanese accent or whatever. But I was in New York one time and I saw this Asian American talking like this. How you doing? What's going on, gay? And I was like, what? It just blew my mind. I was like, it's like an Asian Goomba. So, you know, that's going to exist. And so for me, I think the breaking of stereotypes is more interesting.
But one of the things I try to do with my stand-up is to break stereotypes. And I've been guilty of stereotyping as well. I was in Dubai, and there's a lot of Indians who work in Dubai, and they don't get paid that well. And I got in my head that all the Indians there must be workers. And I forgot there's obviously successful Indians in Dubai as well. I was doing a show, and they said, we're going to send a driver to pick you up. So I went down to the lobby, and I saw this Indian guy. I go, he's got to be my driver. Because he was standing there in like a cheap suit, thin mustache, staring at me. So I went over, excuse me, sir, are you my driver? He goes, no, sir, I own the hotel. I go, I'm sorry, then why were you staring at me? He goes, I thought you were my driver. I'll leave you guys with this. I try with my stand-up to break stereotypes, present Middle Easterners in a positive light, Muslims in a positive light, and I hope that in the coming years, more film and television programs come out of Hollywood presenting us in a positive light. Who knows, maybe one day we'll even have our own James Bond, right? My name is Bond, Jamal Bond. Till then, I'll keep telling jokes. I hope you keep laughing. Have a good day. Thank you.
Comedian and actor Maaz Jobrani. He's about to release an action movie spoof with a Middle Eastern protagonist who does not play a terrorist. It's called Jimmy Vestwood, American Hero.
Midterm elections changed things on the Hill. Who will be speaker next? John Boehner will. The Democrats had no cohesive plan. So we brought back the party who was there when this mess began.
I'm John Boehner. I'll be your new speaker. I'll arrest those nasty WikiLeakers. The followers of me don't drink Kool-Aid, only tea. The results that you all saw election night gave power to the loonies of the right. We prefer our ice hockey teams with no left wing. And left-handers should never pitch a game.
I am not a cold-hearted kind of guy. If you say I'm insensitive, I'll cry. My appeal is that I am quite orange. I just realized nothing rhymes with orange. So now I'll tell the truth. I don't use a tanning booth to look like steak that's overcooked a tad. The fact is that I'm really Snooki's dad.
And now back to Playing with Stereotype.
Okay, picture this scene. There's a guy on the TED stage. He looks like he's from India or Pakistan, brown skin, slim, probably about 30. And he's on a chair wearing a traditional Indian kurta pajama. But he's not sitting. He's squatting like a yogi. And on another chair next to him is a woman who looks Chinese. Her name is Yu Yu Rao. And the Indian-looking guy, he's the performance artist Hiten Patel. And Yu Yu is his translator. So if you're confused, that's the point. Here's Hiten Patel.
Hi, I'm Hiten. I'm an artist. And this is Yu Yu. I have asked her to translate for me. I was born and raised near Manchester in England, but I'm not going to say it in English to you, as I'm trying to avoid any assumptions that might be made from my northern accent. The only problem with masking it with Chinese Mandarin is I can only speak this paragraph, which I have learned by heart when I was visiting in China. So all I can do is keep repeating it in different tones and hope you won't notice.
You do not speak Chinese.
No, I don't.
You actually speak English with a Manchester accent.
Yeah. I guess it was, you know, I like this idea that when we meet somebody, I think it's natural that we want to place them somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, in a part of the world, in a community, in an environment. And so I wanted to take that away a bit because the reality is that our lives and our personalities and whatnot are made up of so much more than your kind of localized area. You know, your localized area can be the world now.
Hiten Patel was born in a town called Bolton. It's just outside Manchester. His parents immigrated to the UK from India back in the 1960s. And as a kid, he just wanted to be British.
You know, I went to a school where I was the only non-white kid there. And so, you know, from a very young age, you kind of go into the whole process of trying to lose your Indian accent, trying to walk and talk like the natives, and trying to fit in as you do as a kid.
What were those stereotypes that people had of you that and your culture that just drive you crazy?
It's funny when I think of these because some of them are true. That we eat curry every day, we eat Indian food every day, which we did. that we stink of curry.
You just called it food.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, it's the school dinners where you have egg, chips, and beans. That's exotic for us. and all the kind of stereotyped relationship to discipline. You know, the idea that we should work all the time and study and things like that. All that was true. But I think the annoying thing, or the thing that would drive me crazy in a way, was that when you're young, you're made to feel that that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
You're made to feel that that's a bad thing. You know, when I was a kid, when I started primary school, when I was 6 years old, I was ashamed of the fact that I spoke Gujarati. I was ashamed of my Indian accent. I was ashamed that I ate curry at home. I was ashamed of the colors and the Hindu things at home. And that for, a young kid, you know, it's not good. So I think it's that kind of that you're made to feel that the difference is wrong or it's inferior or something that should exclude you.
Yeah, I mean, there's such a fine line between stereotyping and identity. And Because on the one hand, like when you're a kid, it's normal to want to just be like the other kids. But on the other hand, some, you know, there are elements of your identity that also get sort of pushed aside.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good point. Sometimes I talk about my practice, my art practice, as kind of a continual struggle to try to be free. Freedom in a lot of ways, whether it's to do with stereotyping or what kind of jobs we're in or what kind of clothes we wear or what we allow, is self-permission. You know, it's what we allow ourselves to believe that we can do or to be or to act.
I mean, that's really, I think, the core of it. It's like it's about breaking free from that because having limitations put on you, whether you do it to yourself or others do it to you, it's like a trap. It's like a prison.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not just about freeing yourself from boxes other people put you in or that you put yourself in, but it's also trying to free yourself from perceptions that you have about other people. You know, it has to be both of those ways, not just about yourself, but how you see the outside world.
Which is exactly why Hatane and his so-called translator Yu Yu play with our perceptions in their performances.
So, my artwork is about challenging common assumptions based on what we look like or where we come from. What makes us who we are, anyway? I used to read Spider-Man comics, watch Kung Fu movies, take philosophy lessons from Bruce Lee. He would say things like,
empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. Put in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Be water, my friend.
This year, I'm 32 years old, the same age Bruce Lee was when he died. I have been wondering recently, if he were alive today, what advice he would give me?
Don't imitate my voice. It offends me.
Good advice, but I still think that we learn who we are by copying others. Who here hasn't imitated their childhood hero in the playground, or mom, or father? I have.
Okay, so contrary to what we might usually assume, imitating somebody can reveal something unique. Every time I fail to become more like my father, I become more like myself. Every time I fail to become Bruce Lee, I become more authentically me. This is my art. I strive for authenticity, even if it comes in a shape that we might not usually expect. Thank you.
Performance artist Hatane Patel, you have to watch his whole talk. It is so cool. It's at ted.npr.org. Our show today, ideas about stereotypes, prejudice, and assumptions. Stay with us. I'm Guy Raz, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Guy Raz, and on today's show, playing with perceptions. So Jamila Liscott is a first-generation American. Her parents are from Trinidad. She grew up in Crown Heights in Brooklyn. And right now she's working on her PhD in literature and race at Columbia. So she's pretty used to moving between different cultures and different ways of speaking, which didn't seem all that unusual to her until she was about 19, and she was asked to be a guest on an academic panel.
I was speaking my most polished version of academic English, which I'm really adept at.
And a woman came up to Jamila to tell her she was very articulate, which might seem like an innocent comment. But to Jamila, right then, it sounded pretty loaded.
And it occurred to me in that moment that had I been speaking with my family, who's Trinidadian, or with people in my community who speak Black English vernacular, that this woman would have maybe not seen the same worth and value in terms of my intellectual capacity or just me. And so when someone calls me articulate, it's not so much that they've never heard someone put together some words very well. It's that coming from my body, coming from my skin, coming from me, it's suddenly impressive.
On the subway home that night, Jamila started writing a poem about the experience which she got to perform on the TED stage. Here's an excerpt.
A baffled lady observed the shell where my soul dwells and announced that I'm articulate, which means that when it comes to enunciation and diction, I don't even think of it because I'm articulate. So when my professor asks a question and my answer is tainted with the connotation of urbanized suggestion, there's no misdirected intention. Pay attention because I'm articulate. So when my father asks, what kind of thing is this? My articulate answer never goes amiss. I say, Father, this is the impending problem at hand. And when I'm on the block, I switch it up just because I can. So when my boy says, what's good with you, son? I say, I just fall out with them people, but I done. And sometimes in class, I might pause the intellectual sound and flow to ask, yo, why these books never be about my peoples? Yes, I have decided to treat all three of my languages as equal because I'm articulate. But who controls articulation? Because the English language is a multifaceted oration subject to indefinite transformation. Now you may think that it is ignorant to speak broken English, but I'm here to tell you that even articulate Americans sound foolish to the British. So when my professor comes on the block and says hello, I stop him and say, no, you're being inarticulate. The proper way is to say what's good. Now, you may think that's too hood, that's not cool, but I'm here to tell you that even our language has rules. So when mommy mocks me and says, y'all be mad going to the store, I say, mommy, no, that sentence is not following the law. Never does the word mad go before a present participle. That's simply the principle of this English. If I had the vocal capacity, I would sing this from every mountaintop, every suburbia, and every hood, because the only God of language is the one recorded in the Genesis of this world, saying it is good. So I may not always come before you with excellency of speech, but do not judge me by my language and assume that I'm too ignorant to teach, because I speak three tongues, one for each, home, school, and friends. I'm a trilingual orator. Sometimes I'm consistent with my language, now to switch it up so I don't bore later. Sometimes I fight back two tongues while I use the other one in the classroom, and when I mistakenly mix them up, I feel crazy like I'm cooking in the bathroom. I know. Let there be no confusion. Let there be no hesitation. This is not a promotion of ignorance. This is a linguistic celebration. That's why I put trilingual on my last job application. I can help to diversify your consumer market is all I wanted them to know. And when they call me for the interview, I'll be more than happy to show that I can say what's good, what's agwan, and of course, hello. Because I'm articulate. Thank you.
One straight to a guy bomber clad head, red and dread. One come a treat, I reject the tiddly.
Rejected.
But I'm on to culturally.
Cultural.
No want I pan MTV on. And things say you're done with me. Is a rude boy a shuffle? Jam up our us, so jam.
babies. When them jam up arrows, yeah. Sir Judge and Emperor Fate. In a ghetto, old fence vibrate. Rude boy a shuffle and a
rude boy shuffle kinky reggae.
Back away with your muffle in a yeah. Say da 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 da. Rude boy a skunky. Deny me, promote the worst and a sloppy tidy. Now do you them officiously? Got to face your reality. That is a rude boy a shuffling.
Rude boy a shuffling kinky reggae.
Back away with your muffling, yeah. Say, I want to tell you, rude boy a skunky. Violently, so how you think you are going to hold back me? Millions of you more of violently, so how you think you are going to hold back me? Hey, want peace in society? You better put me on your MTV. You want to hold down the violence? Hey, you better put me on your MTV. A rude boy, a shuffle.
And now for something completely different.